Empire, Ida Red, Golden Delicious, Jonathan, Harrelson, Honeycrisp, Mutsu, Northern Spy. It's apple season in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is Horticulture Day, and we're going to talk about apples. Paul DeMoto is a professor of horticulture at Iowa State University who specializes in fruit production. Today we'll talk about the history of apple production in Iowa, how to care for apple trees, organic versus conventional apple growing, how best to store that big bag of apples you bring home from the orchard this fall, and we'll be taking your calls as well. Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here, and he'll take care of any non-fruit-related questions you may have about your yard or your garden. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is Horticulture Day, and we're going to start off by focusing on apples. Later on in the hour, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will join us to answer your questions about your yard or garden. But right now, my guest is Paul DeMoto. He is a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I want to start with the history of apple production in Iowa. I don't think Johnny Appleseed made it this far west. So when did apple cultivation really begin here?
Oh, gosh. Like anywhere, early settlers, when they first immigrated into Iowa, brought apples. So similar to, with Johnny, probably the early, when did they come in here? But, before statehood.
Okay. So in the early part of the 19th century then.
Yes.
And I know that apples are really opportunistic, so they grow in a lot of different environments. Does Iowa have a particularly good environment for apple production?
Historically, the Les Hills in western Iowa were what was considered the apple-growing area. And of course, there, they actually were loading freight trains that went to the east with apples. But in recent years, it's changed. It's more migrated to where we have the population centers in the state.
Is there anything that made that environment in western Iowa more or better for apples, or is it just that's where people who had orchards tended to be?
No, it was the deep, well-drained soils, the less type soils, and so at good internal drainage of the soil makes more favorable for the apple trees.
The apple growing that's being done in the state of Iowa right now, how significant would you say that production is?
Well, it's really dropped off, unfortunately. At one time here, the late or the 1990s, early part of that, we were estimating about 2,000 acres of apple in production, commercial production, but it's probably dropped off to about 1,000 acres now. And part of that was we have many of these orchards were, aging and no one wanted to take over. We've had competition come in. It used to be that, the selection of apple varieties in the supermarket was minimal, but now it's common to find maybe up to 8 different varieties being marketed there.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about varieties because, of course, that's one of the things that you get when you go to an orchard and you actually can pick your own apples or buy the apples that they grow there. You usually get an opportunity to experience varieties that you don't find in the grocery store. But I happen to know that my most hated variety, the Red Delicious, was actually developed here in Iowa.
Well, it wasn't developed. It was discovered.
Discovered.
Discovered would be the proper term for that. And that, it was a what we call a chance seedling. Just came up, probably open pollinated. It had to be open pollinated, and the gentleman Jesse Hyatt found it growing in his orchard, and then it goes on from there.
And why was that apple so popular? Why did that really take off and spread around the nation?
probably more so than anything is that, you know, it really gained popularity when Washington State developed their apple industry. And it has a unique shape. And then what they did is they found and it was very prone to mutation or, you know, color sports and stuff. And so it really, what brought it on was the marketing ploy used by the Washington State Apple Growers Group.
You mentioned that it was a chance seedling, and I think that happens a lot with the apples. Tell us a little bit about apple seeds. When you plant an apple seed, you're not going to replicate the kind of apple that seed came from.
No, absolutely not, because, our apples have to be, you know, to get good fruit set, we have to we rely upon cross-pollination. So, so that means pollen from another variety is transferred to the flower, and there it, you know, and fertilizes the seeds. And so each seed has the potential of being a hybrid or is a hybrid. And so you have a tremendous diversity of progeny. If you've planted a million seeds, you probably come up with a million different apples, a little bit different in characteristic.
So how do you propagate apple trees when you find a variety that you want to continue? How do you make the next generation?
It's done through vegetative propagation. The two ways, budding, transferring a single bud to a rootstock, or transferring a portion of the shoot, which we call the scion, that has maybe 2 to 3 buds, and grafting that onto a rootstock.
When apple seeds are grown, of course, you do find these hybrids. Is that how the new kinds of apples are discovered yet today?
Yes. And, of course, some of this today now, is particularly with the scab immune type or the University of Minnesota looking for more cold-hardy varieties, it is actually they're actually doing controlled crosses to attempt to, you know, improve and increase their success rate.
There was a time, to return to the Red Delicious, when apples were bred for shipping, basically. I think that's part of what made the Red Delicious so popular. It was a very red apple, and it was easy to ship because of its unique shape. What are people looking for now with the apple research that's being done today?
Well, disease resistance, cold hardiness, improved flavor. And, of course, improved flavor, the Europeans have caught on to this long before we did. And so many of our varieties we're growing here today are either from Europe or from Australia or New Zealand.
And when you say that they caught on to improved flavor in Europe before we did, what do you mean?
Well, ours, unfortunately, red, brighter the red, the better for a while there. And so, and as you said, your least favorite apple was the Red Delicious, and so what sold it was the high color. And unfortunately, you go into a supermarket, you don't have that opportunity to taste the fruit before you purchase it.
Right. Are red apples still the best sellers?
Probably.
What's your favorite kind of apple?
My favorite would be one that has a little more what we call sprightliness, or a better balance between the acids and the sugars. I choose my apples seasonal. Jonathan, early in is very good apple, soon after it's harvested. But if we go later into the season, it gets off, and so you select another one. And again, you have to consider the use, too. If you're going to eat them fresh, or are you going to process them, make pies out of them? It varies there.
If you want to grow apple trees at your home, and of course, if you drive around Iowa, there are these old apple trees on many farmsteads that probably have varieties that have been lost for a long time. But if you want to grow apple trees on your property, How do you choose a variety that would be good for your site?
You know, most of them would be, if the soil is adequately drained, most any of them will grow well. You know, yes, there's a little difference between attempting to grow some varieties in northern Iowa versus southern Iowa. You know, some such as Golden Delicious would be a little bit tender in the northern climate. But then again, something like the recent release, the Honeycrisp from Minnesota, doesn't do that well in southern Iowa.
Oh, really? So it actually, it's not only cold hardy, but it likes that better?
It tends to like that. What we run into when we run it, we move into the warmer climate, we have more physiological problems, disorders associated with the fruit.
You said that apple trees like a well-drained soil. Is there anything else you should consider when you're picking a site to plant an apple tree?
Well, excuse me. To avoid spring frosts or reduce the risk, an elevated site, elevated or in relation to the surrounding area, will improve reduce the risk of a spring frost.
So up on a slope or something,
yes,
along,
yes,
those lines. Now, of course, the people who have grown apples at their homes or have an apple tree at their home, if they don't do anything to take care of it, they find that they get pretty wormy and they're not very pretty apples. What do you need to do to protect your apples?
Well, unfortunately, you know, the only recourse there would be, well, there's two, actually. One is to spray with pesticides to control the insects. Two major ones would be the codling moth and the apple maggot. So you could do it that way. You could, with the apple maggot, if you wanted to avoid using pesticides, you could hang sticky red spheres in the tree and balls. And the idea there is to catch and trap the adult apple maggot fly. And it is somewhat successful. With the codling moth, you could attempt to hang pheromone traps in your tree, and hopefully that your, what the pheromone trap does is catch the male moth, and hopefully that way you know, there's the sense greater that you'll keep them from mating with the female.
Have you tried those methods?
I haven't, but some of the organic growers do these techniques.
All right. And, of course, with organic apples, you're not going to have the perfect-looking apple, but still, they'll taste awfully good.
And, you know, one of the big things for the, you know, the homeowner, if they want to, is disease problems. Apple scab in particular, of course, this year, it's real evident on crab apples. Richard and I were walking over, and you know, we saw a lot of this crab apples
on
campus.
We'll talk more about apple scab in just a moment. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today, and right now we're talking about apples. My guest is Paul DeMoto. He's a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and we'll also be answering your questions on the program today as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Cheat on the apple tree with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and with me are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Paul DeMoto. He's a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And we're talking apples right now. We're going to continue our apple discussion for a moment, but you're also welcome to call with your apple and other fruit-related questions or any other questions you have about your yard or garden. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Paul, before we got to the break, we were just beginning to talk about diseases that affect apple trees, such as apple scab. What can you do to protect your trees?
Okay, one of the simplest things is to plant scab immune or scab resistant apple varieties. We have a publication, Fruit Cultivars for Iowa, and it lists those cultivars. They're, you know, they're a little different in character than your your familiar apples, but at least the problem with the disease is greatly reduced.
And what kinds of problems are caused by that disease?
Well, if the apple scab is serious, it can defoliate the tree. It will leave scabby marks on the fruit. It's superficial, but it doesn't look nice.
Okay. And I have to ask you a practical question before we move on to some callers, and that is, with so many people visiting orchards this time of year and bringing home big bags of apples, what is the best way to store them?
Keep them cool if you want to eat them fresh. If you store them in a refrigerator in a polyethylene bag. Refrigerators, they will slow down the respiration, so they store longer, but you get a lot of moisture loss from them. So by putting them in the bag, you reduce that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a real fan of the flavor of an apple that's been in the refrigerator for a really long time.
Yeah.
All right. We have a lot of calls about apples, and first up is Marge in Windsor Heights. Hello, Marge.
Good morning. We have lived several different states, and the last state we lived in was Ohio, and we had a wonderful apple there called a Melrose. And I was wondering, is there a similar apple in Iowa? It was a hybrid. I can't tell you now what it was. It was, I think it was a cross between a Delicious and a Jonathan or something, but it was very tasty, and you could also use it for pies. And
yes.
Would there be a similar type of apple if I went to an apple farm here that I could ask for?
Yes, there is. Chieftain apple is very, very similar to the
Chieftain?
Melrose.
Chieftain?
Chieftain, yes.
Okay.
And it's an Iowa State release, and some of the many of our commercial orchards grow it. But like Melrose, it is a Delicious by Jonathan Cross.
Uh-huh.
It tends to be rather firm, Melrose that way.
Right.
And it's probably a little higher soluble sugars than the Melrose.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking more of eating it because nowadays I tend to buy the Granny Smith for pies, but that was an advantage to them because they made good pies and they sure made good eating.
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next we have Ray in Mason City. Hello, Ray.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
My favorite apple is always, just a minute, I'm going to turn the radio down.
Okay. Thanks.
My favorite apple always has been the wine sap, and it's harder to find all the time. It's a later variety, and it keeps better, but it also, to me, it's always had the best flavor.
Well, that's interesting. We actually got another email from Julia in Des Moines on the exact same topic, saying that she's only lived in Iowa for a year and hasn't been able to find any wine sap apples. And why not? Do you?
Well, part of it is that it is late maturing. There are a few orchards that still grow it, but you really have to look for them. You're going to more likely find them in southern Iowa. But wine sap has a very, very unique flavor. It's really, it's fantastic in a cider, but it's just hard to find.
If you want to grow some of these varieties that you are particularly attached to at your home and you look around on the internet, you can find different places to buy nursery stock that have these specific apples. Do you have any recommendations as far as the best way to go about ordering a particular variety of apple?
You've just got to get on the nursery sites and see what they list because the difference in purchasing, say, a wine sap from one nursery versus the other isn't going to be that much different, okay? Much of the propagation now is done on the West Coast where they have a longer growing season, and so they're really, there's few that are propagated locally.
In looking, I recently have been perusing these sites because we're putting in some apple trees at our house, and I've noticed, you can find the nurseries in California. You can also find nurseries in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Does it make more sense to try to purchase nursery stock that is grown in an environment more similar to what we would have in Iowa?
No, not at all. It's the combination of the variety and the rootstock, and the year in the nursery isn't going to make that much difference.
All right. Bill is on the line now in Kelowna. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, I had a comment about you were speculating earlier about when apples appeared in Iowa historically. And as I recall, the earliest known apple orchard in Iowa was at a Lewis Honor Tisson's trading post, which is where Montrose is now in Lee County. In the 1810s and 1820s, he built an apple, or he planted an apple orchard. And his chief complaint was that the Sauk Indians would come by and just pick the whole crop green and eat it green because they developed a taste for green apples. So apples have been in Iowa for at least since the early decades of the 19th century. That's all.
That is a fascinating story. We'll have to do a little more research on that. Thanks a lot, Bill.
Okay, you bet. Bye.
All right, thank you very much. If you have any questions about anything growing in your yard or garden, more apple questions or other fruit tree questions, feel free to give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Sarah sent us an email, another apple-related email, and she wants to ask about apple fences, trees that are trained along a fence. I'd love to have an apple tree, but I don't think we have enough room for another large tree in our yard. Are there any specific varieties that might work for that kind of planting in Iowa?
What I believe she's referring to is one espalier form, you know, training them or trellising the apple so that it's spreading along the fence and rather a narrow canopy. Typically, a variety that has a more spreading growth habit, such as the Jonathan, or I'll give you a good example on a scab immune one, it would be Enterprise, would be more adapted to this rather than something that has a very upright growth habit.
Okay. And with apple trees, I know that, Richard, you talk about this all the time, but I know that with fruit trees, pruning is very important. What kinds of things do you need to think about as far as pruning your apple trees?
Pruning, it depends. There's two ways to prune. One is to, just on considering just the shoots, removing the shoot, what we refer to as thinning out, removing the entire thing, versus removing just a portion of the shoot. And really to get, in our modern training systems, we're doing less and less of removing just a portion of the shoot as opposed to removing the whole shoot. And another aspect is that keep in mind that growth that's growing very upright is going to be less prone to fruiting than some growth that's growing more in a horizontal position.
Okay, and of course, keeping it horizontal makes it a lot easier to pick, too.
Yes, yes.
All right. Jim is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a apple tree in my backyard that I've always wondered what kind it is. It's a perfectly shaped yellow apple, but it tastes just like a yellow Bartlett pear. And I was wondering how I could get another one just like it. Would I have to propagate it from the tree I've got, or could I go buy one that's been grown up from anywhere in a nursery or something, but I don't even know the name of it?
Yeah. Probably the best way would to be propagate it yourself. Dr. Patrick O'Malley, who is your Eastern Iowa our horticulture field specialist, does conduct propagation workshops each spring. And so the thing you can do is collect some of the scion wood, which is, would be the one-year-old shoots, and attend one of his sessions, and you could, propagate your tree so you'll have some more.
How do I get a hold of this Patrick O'Malley?
He's at the Johnson County Extension Office.
Okay.
And if he wanted to try to figure out what kind of apple this is, and of course it may not be an apple that is cataloged somewhere, but is there a way to tell?
They can send samples to me, okay, and I can attempt to identify it based upon my knowledge and many references I have.
What kind of sample?
Okay, I would require a representative sample of the fruit, so not just one, maybe a couple.
No problem. Yeah.
With the stem intact on the fruit, that's a real important thing. And also, do not polish them. I want to see the bloom on it as well.
Hey, okay. I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, what kind of process do you go through when you get a sample like that?
I look at it. If it looks, you know, I'm looking for identifying characters of the fruit, and then I've got written descriptions. I've got pictures in a few cases, but some old historical books that, you know, I try to pin it down. It's not easy, can't do it all the time, but in some cases I'm able to.
I've actually heard other people talk about your amazing skills. They claim that you can just sniff it.
Not quite, but sniffing is part of it.
And do you taste it too?
That's the absolute last resort.
Okay.
Okay, for me.
All right. Steve is on the line next in Waterloo with a question for Richard this time. Hello, Steve.
Good morning. First of all, thank you very much for this great service you provide to our citizens of the great state. Greatly appreciate it. My question for you is, I have front lawn that has absolutely no shade, and I'd say about a month or so ago, there's probably an area that's maybe 30 by 40 or so that just went from beautiful green to just brown literally overnight. Tried watering it or trying to bring it back, and it just looks like it is completely dormant. And brown as brown can be, as if everything's been frozen. But the areas around it are kind of green or spotty green, and I'm just trying to wonder, will this come back next spring?
Okay, as far as what the problem might be, my first thought would be it could be either insects like white grubs or possibly disease. And so I would recommend that you go out to the brown area and just lean over and grab a hand of grass and kind of pull it up.
Okay.
And see if it does pull up. If it does pull up like a loose carpet,
right,
then you probably have grubs. What the grubs do is they eat on the roots of the turf grass plants, and if they have destroyed the entire root system, it will pull up like a loose piece of carpet.
Got it. Okay.
You also see the white grubs in the soil. Okay.
Sure.
So that's pretty easy. If you lean over and pull, and the grass simply breaks off at the soil surface, it doesn't pull up, it just breaks off,
right,
then that would indicate probably disease, because the plant is still intact. It's dead, but it's still intact.
Right. Okay.
So as far as what to do, well, it's probably too late to treat for grubs, so I wouldn't do that if you do find them. And it's getting kind of late to repair the damage, too.
Okay.
As far as seeding or sodding, you could still sod if you wanted to do that. But as far as seeding, it's probably getting a little bit too late on that. So if you decide, well, I don't want to sod, I'm going to seed, then I would probably put that off until next spring, like mid-April.
Okay.
And at that point, at the very least, you're going to have to go out there and maybe rake it real hard.
Sure.
And remove any of that dead plant debris, but that would also break the soil surface so that then you can broadcast the seed either by hand or using something else, and then very lightly rake the seed into the soil.
Very good.
And hopefully by next June you'll have a nice stand of grass.
Very fine. I'll call you back next June and let you know what happened.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you. You have a beautiful weekend. And again, thanks for your service.
Oh, thank you so much. The number to call if you have a question is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we have Dan in Davenport. Hello, Dan.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Yes, I have a six-year-old semi-dwarf Harrelson apple tree. Last year, produced about 6 bushels of apples. This year, no apples at all. No blossoms even. I prune it every late February. I use a dormant oil spray. I cross-pollinate with a red-free dwarf tree. So some of the old-timers in Davenport tell me it's normal that after a good year, you might have a year with no fruit. But I want to find out what the experts think.
Yes. Your tree has gone into biennial bearing, okay? And it's and as the old-timers said, if you get a bumper crop 1 year, just doesn't come back the second year. And the reason is that the fruit buds are initiated actually the year before they bloom, and typically in June. And so with the heavy crop, there just wasn't enough reserve foods to initiate new blossoms.
Okay. Should I fertilize it more? Or?
No. What you really need to do is you need to thin that crop. Reduce the number of fruit on the tree when you had that bumper crop. Figured that if you have one fruit per every 4 to 5 blossom clusters, you would have a full crop.
Okay, one fruit for every 4 to 5
Blossom clusters.
Okay.
Okay.
So are you recommending that he thins in the blossom stage or later on?
Just later on. Okay.
Once it starts looking like fruit?
Yes, yes. Or soon after bloom, when you could tell. Or up to about, let's put it this way, within 30 days of bloom.
Within 30 days?
30 days. Okay. Okay, or 1 month. And, you could do this by hand. It's real tedious.
Mm-hmm.
A shortcut is to, if you're willing to use sprays, is to spray, or insecticides, spray the plant the after bloom with 7 insecticide.
Okay.
Okay. If you read the label real carefully on that product, it'll tell you not to use it because it will thin the fruit.
Okay, so spray with 7 right after bloom.
Yes, and with Harrelson, you probably have to do it a couple of times at least.
All right.
Okay. 2 weeks apart, you think?
Probably 7 to 10 days apart.
7 to 10 days apart.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Dan, thanks so much for your call, and good luck with that. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. My guests today are Paul DeMoto. He's a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture. And you can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talks. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me are ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Paul DeMoto, a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State who specializes in fruit production. And you are welcome to call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next we have Gerald on the line in Fairfield. Hello, Gerald.
Hi. I have a question about McIntosh apples. We come from the East, and I really like those, and I have a hard time finding them here. Is there any way I can get them, or is there a substitute I can get that's very similar to a McIntosh?
Boy, that's a tough one because, Cortland's similar, but it's still not a McIntosh. You might check up at, Wilson's Orchard, just north of Iowa City.
Yeah, I believe they do have McIntosh.
Yeah, he's got 50 some varieties, and I believe McIntosh is one of them. A few growers grow it, but it is a little bit temperamental in our climate, and that's why you don't see more of it.
But there's nothing that's similar other than the Cortland.
Other than the Cortland, Liberty. Again, a scab immune variety or resistant is similar. Actually, it's if you really like a tart apple, it's slightly tartar than the McIntosh, but still does not have that wonderful aroma that comes off a McIntosh apple.
Do they require a frost before they're really ready?
Actually, they mature ahead, but later they mature with Red Delicious, so typically in late September, whereas McIntosh would be early to mid September for us.
Thank you very much. Do appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for your call, Gerald. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And next up, we have Adele in Atkins. Hi, Adele.
Hi. I had a question. We live out in the country. We have a wooded property, and we have these vines that are growing up on some of our trees, well, actually a lot of our trees, and I was wondering what we could do about that because they're kind of choking out a lot of the trees.
Okay. There could be a number of vines on there. There could be annual vines like, for example, wild cucumber, You might have woody vines like Virginia creeper. And if I thought it was an annual vine, I would simply pull them off. I would just go out there, pull them off or cut them off, and that should take care of them for this year. If I have something like Virginia creeper, which is a woody vine, if you just cut them off, that's not going to destroy them. What you could do in the case of a woody vine like a Virginia creeper or even poison ivy, you can cut them off near the ground and then immediately apply Roundup to the cut surface.
Okay.
And you can use like a foam-type paintbrush and just dip that in the Roundup and then dab it on the cut surface. And the Roundup then should go down into the root system and kill the root system so it shouldn't come back next year.
Okay. When would be the best time I should do that? This fall or...
If you're going to do that, if you have a woody vine, I would do that as soon as possible because the Roundup is more readily absorbed when the plant is actively growing. And soon it's going to go dormant. So if you did this like in late October or November, it's not probably going to work very well.
Okay. Well, excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Adele. And we have a couple of emails here. One is from David in Des Moines. He says, the University of Minnesota has produced some of the most popular varieties of apples in the United States. And we talked about that briefly earlier. Their most recent releases, such as the Sweet Tango, are offered under very restrictive license terms. What is the reasoning behind these license terms? And are there other programs adopting similar policies? And what does that mean for small apple growers?
Oh, yes. To all. Yes, it's a trend. It started in Washington State with a few of the releases that they have that only certain growers can get them. The Sweet Tangle, for instance, is restricted to Minnesota growers pretty much, or actually some in New York too, in other states, but it is restricted. It is a marketing ploy. I can't say I'm in agreement with it, but part of it has been to protect the rights, the propagation rights of it.
And so for small growers, what does it mean?
It means that they could look, if you're in Minnesota, if you lived in Minnesota as a small grower, you could obtain it. But otherwise, other states until maybe later on, you cannot.
So if you went to, just as an individual, if you went to a nursery in Minnesota, would you be able to buy one of these varieties, or are they only restricted to people who grow commercially?
Right now, I believe they're only restricted to those growing commercially.
Okay.
And so as a homeowner, you cannot obtain them.
All right. We have a call next from Bill in Brazil. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I planted some garlic last fall, and it seemed to disappear and fade away, or seemed like early in the summer. Now, all of a sudden, I've got all kinds of sprouts coming up. Should I leave them in the ground as they are, separate them? Is there anything I can do, or should I just harvest them and use them as I can?
Now, when you say they're coming up, what do you mean?
In where I had planted them, there's about six green shoots coming up, six or seven green shoots in each spot. So it's just kind of like they're already growing. Is it too late to do anything helpful for next year? Or?
Well, I think what you could do is, I'm assuming what happened was that they came up this spring, they grew, and then they died back by, let's say, early to mid-August.
Right.
And now they started to grow again.
Uh-huh.
So you could dig those up and maybe eat some of the bigger ones, use some of the bigger ones, and then replant the smaller ones immediately.
Okay.
And then they would hopefully produce a crop next year.
All right. So even though they're growing a little bit now, they would go back and come back again maybe?
Well, I think I would probably dig them up because if you leave them in place, they're going to be kind of overcrowded.
Yeah.
So I would dig them up, maybe use some of the bigger ones, replant some of the smaller ones.
Separated.
And right. And do that as soon as possible.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much for your call.
Okay. Goodbye.
We have an email from Casey, and she wants to have a recommendation. She says a very special baby was born yesterday. Her name is Hattie Elizabeth Burroughs, and we'd like to plant a tree in the backyard where she'll be able to play and climb it as she grows older. What do you suggest we plant?
Well, okay.
That's
as far
pretty
as
broad.
Yes. Really, what you should do is kind of go out to the site and see if you have any special problems or possible concerns, and then try to find a tree that's suitable for that site. But in general, I guess I would look at maples, possibly a sugar maple, black maple, maybe a red maple, silver maple hybrid like Autumn Blaze. But I would look at maples. I would look at the oaks, like the red oak, for example. It's a very nice tree. I would look at lindens, again, a very nice shade tree. Those would be possibilities, very common in landscapes. So maples, oaks, lindens would be my first thought.
All right, and I'm sure Mark Vitosh, who was here last week, would say oaks.
Yep, probably.
He wouldn't even think about it, I don't think. All right, we have another caller. Next up, we have Gary in Ames. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I had planted a plum tree about 8 years ago, and for the first, I guess 5 years, it just grew. It's probably about 10 feet and tall now, and about that broad. And this year, for the first year, it produced a great quantity of really nice plums. And I'm wondering if that tree should be pruned. I've seen sometimes where a tree like that would produce so much fruit that it just was almost harmful to it. And would pruning help that? Or if this happens, should a person just remove a certain portion of the fruit to keep it from overbearing? And then there weren't any worms or bugs in the prune or the plums this year. I'm wondering if that could be a problem in the future.
The pruning thing situation, yes, maybe there will be some thinning required, but if you're going to do any pruning, you want to do it in moderation. You don't want to prune hard, particularly if it bore a heavy crop this year. You don't want to go in there and prune it hard next year because you may just trigger it into too much vegetative growth. Find out if it's coming back and then, you know, if it looks like it's going to come back with a fruit set. Typically, the plum group can come back. Once in a while, we'll see a biennial bearing situation, but not always. But again, they can overproduce on occasion.
All right. Good luck with that, Gary. And Paul, before the end of the show today, I have a question about cherry trees for you. And actually, from conversations earlier this summer with Richard, I was convinced that the cherry trees on our property were dead because they had both had wonderful crops and then dropped all of their leaves. And with all the water this year, we thought that they were pretty much done for. Now, both of the trees have sprouted some leaves, like tufts of leaves in some areas, and one of them actually has a few blossoms. And I don't yes. feel that this bodes well, but what do you think?
No, it doesn't. What happened is you probably, with all the moisture we've had this year and stuff, cherry leaf spot. It's a disease, and it will defoliate. If it's not, no attempt is made to control it, it will defoliate the tree. Okay, with that defoliation, what you've seen tufts of leaves and a few blossoms, and the blossoms are becoming because they're the shock of losing the leaves was like a dormant cycle for them, and it shocked them into breaking dormancy. And so it's not good.
Is there any hope?
There's hope, but it's going to be less cold hardy this winter. So, it's going to be a matter of watching to see if it makes it through or not. And then plan on doing some disease control next season to, be able to retain the leaves.
Okay. So it's just a wait and see kind of situation
yes,
at this
yes.
point. All right. Next up, we have Doug in Osage. Hello, Doug.
Hello.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I got a couple of comments for the grass seeding and for fruit trees. My experience with grass seeding is when in the springtime, you rake it, you put the seed on, and then rake it in again, and then you put more seed on because the birds will always come back and take more than what you plant. So you always overplant your seeds. And then with the fruit, we had a pine tree up in this, or a pear tree up in the cities, and we experienced that one year we had a lot of pears, and we heard that if you take a rubber hose and you bat around the tree in the next spring, you will have crops every year. And we did that for 7 years, and every year we had bumper crops of fruit on a pear tree.
Okay, so Paul, what anything behind the rubber hose?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
What happens is by beating the trunk, you're inducing ethylene production. Okay, it's a wound healing response, and with that, what you do is you get a temporary stoppage of growth.
Okay.
Of the overall plant because it's trying to heal these wounds. And with that temporary stoppage of growth, what it does is that it's stopping the vegetative growth, but it triggers them into to maybe taking some of those food reserves and putting them into flower bud initiation. You got to remember that fruiting is the vegetative reproduction the reproduction cycle of the plant. So the plant, you're triggering it, it's stressed, it's trying to preserve the species or the plant by making more, producing more seed.
Is that something you would recommend?
Not really. You could. But then again, another technique that's been used to bring trees into production is girdling. Does basically the same thing. But again, it's usually it's a one-time shot.
Okay, well, then the rubber hose at least wouldn't damage it forever.
Well, it'll it's temporary.
Yeah.
As long as you don't beat it to the point that you open up the bark, you're probably okay.
Okay.
It's just a lot of
don't
work.
Don't overdo it.
All right, I think we have time for one last question. This is Amy in Des Moines. Hello, Amy.
Hi, I'm trying not to laugh after hearing the rubber hose treatment. I have two river birches that are planted about 30 feet apart, and I'm interested in putting in a rain garden kind of at the edge of their canopies. And I want to know how close can I get, because I'll have to dig fairly deep. Am I threatening the trees by damaging roots at the canopy edge?
Right. Well, the roots typically extend well beyond the canopy of the actual tree. But we typically say that if you keep all of your construction activity out beyond the drip line, the damage to the tree should not be that severe, that they can probably tolerate that. If you get inside the canopy, then the damage becomes more severe and can have fairly severe consequences. So if you can stay outside the drip line, the trees probably should be okay.
All right, Amy, thank you so much for your call. And Richard and Paul, thank you both for your time today.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron of ISU Extension Horticulture and Paul DeMoto, professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support comes from Russell Mansky in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available all the time on our website, iowapublicradio.org. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show, send us email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up Monday on Talk of Iowa, the growth of agritourism in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.